Hey, I'm Tim, and you're listening to Zombies of the Hippie Trail, a show about all things cannabis delivered to you by a couple of potheads. Now, in a moment, you'll hear me introduce the show as the Hippie Speedball Show, which I thought was a pretty great name. In fact, it was so great that I used it for our podcast, but I wasn't the first person to think that it was great, because, as you might have guessed, that show already exists in the form of the Hippie Speedball Podcast. Fortunately for me, the narrator of that show, Joe, is a pretty gracious fellow and is just an all-around good guy. If you haven't already, check out the Hippie Speedball Podcast and tell Joe that we sent you there. All right, without further ado, I bring you Zombies of the Hippie Trail. Enjoy. Good afternoon and or good evening. Welcome to the Hippie Speedball Show. I'm your co-host, Ozark Mountain Bandit, also known as Tim. Ozark Mountain Bandit is my Instagram handle or screen name or whatever the hell you'd call it. I don't know. Our other co-host here is my esteemed colleague.
Hello, my name is Bryce, and my Instagram handle is Half-Baked.
Hello, Half-Baked, a.k.a. Bryce. We are going to talk about probably a bunch of ridiculous shit, guys. This is our first episode. It's probably going to spiral into chaos, as our conversations usually do. But the point of this podcast is to talk to you guys about the role that cannabis plays in our everyday lives. So Bryce and I, we both grow cannabis. We're both licensed growers here in Missouri. So we'll talk about growing cannabis. We'll talk about how we consume cannabis, maybe talk about some other cannabis concoctions. So concentrates, edibles, things like that. We'll also discuss some cannabis breeding, buying genetics, delving into that whole genetic scene, and then we'll just talk about general cannabis lifestyle. All right, so what we'll do is start this show by introducing ourselves and giving you just a quick bio on each of us. So I'll go first. Again, my name is Tim. I am 39 years old, and the first time I ever consumed cannabis, it was probably when I was around, I want to say 18 or 19 years old. I was not any older than that, but I don't think I was any younger than 18. I was sort of a late bloomer when it comes to cannabis. And it was now this would have been back in the late 90s, probably around 1999. So in Missouri at that time, what we had available to us was Mexican brickweed, aka Reggie. Just nasty pot. It had more stems and seeds than actual pot in it, I'm pretty sure. And it was always brown and flat and nasty. But what we had, and it did the trick. So, my very first experience with cannabis was with my girlfriend at the time. And she was more experienced than I was. And we had this mutual friend who lived out in a county north of us. And he told us he could acquire some cannabis for us. So for the mere price of $20, we got a little chunk of pot in a cellophane package.
Question for you really quick.
Absolutely.
What made you want to try smoking in the first place?
Oh, so yeah, good question. I was always kind of fascinated by it. Just, yeah. I was a good kid. So I never drank. I never did any drugs or anything. I didn't even go to parties when I was in high school. So I was very like studious and straight laced. But honestly, just curiosity got the best of me. And I'll tell you what it was, to be honest. I had an instructor in college who said, "Hey, I've smoked pot and it's not a big deal." And I thought, okay, well, my entire life, yeah, you know, like my entire life, everybody had always said drugs are horrible, they'll mess you up, marijuana is a gateway drug. That was like a big thing. As a child in the 80s, that like the just say no thing was very, very popular when I was growing up.
Anti-weed commercials and stuff. The girl deflated on the couch.
Yeah. So the one that I remember was the kid who's like going through his dad's stash box, and the dad comes in the bedroom and he's like, "Where did you learn how to do this?" And he's like, "I learned it from watching you, Dad." But anybody who's maybe a little older, I remember that one. But yeah, so that it was honestly, it was like this person who I respected a lot and had obviously had significant achievements in their life. This college professor who was like, yeah, I've smoked pot and I'm fine. And to be completely honest with you, if nobody's told you guys this before, pot really isn't that bad. It's not as dangerous as most other intoxicants or drugs. And it's far less addictive than things like alcohol, cigarettes, you know, so he said, if you try pot once or twice, it's not going to permanently affect you. And that's all I needed to hear, really. I was like, okay, well, I can do it once or twice. Spoiler alert, I kept on keeping on. So,
yeah, 20 years later,
here we are. Exactly. We're doing a podcast with a couple of stoners. So, yeah, that was what sort of, I don't want to say what piqued my interest, because I had been interested in it for a long time. Just the thought of this mysterious plant that, you know, had mind altering effects that you weren't supposed to touch, but was probably pretty fun because most things that you're not supposed to play with are. So yeah, we acquired a chunk of pot. I don't even know if it was like measurable, but I know we paid $20 for it. We got it from this, rather short fellow. I believe he was a little person, if I'm going to be politically correct.
Good PC word there. I like
that. Thank you very much. Yeah. So we acquired a small amount of marijuana from a small man, and it was like wrapped in like a cellophane from a cigarette pack. And we had about a 20-minute drive home because this cat lived way out in the sticks. So we drove home. We're on the highway. And I remember we were so paranoid that my girlfriend at the time, like, hid this tiny little chunk of pot in her bra. So, you know, in the event that we got pulled over and, you know, they decided to search the two church-looking kids, you know, they wouldn't find the drugs on us. Anyway, fast forward to later that night, we start breaking it up, and that was sort of a tradition back when I was younger. You know, pot was not, it didn't look the same as it does now. You know, you wouldn't recognize the structure of a bud. It was just like a chunk, like a flat compressed thing. So you'd have to like break it up by hand, pull the stems off, pull the seeds out, crumble it, break it up, make it like kind of fluff it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. So she was showing me how to do that. And I remember her saying, she was sucking on the stems and she's like, if you suck on the stems, it gets you higher. And I'm like, fuck that. No, that thing looks like it was smuggled in someone's butthole. I'm not doing that. So she went downstairs and she lived with her grandmother, and her grandmother smoked cigarettes. And I remember she stole one of her grandmother's cigarettes, emptied out the tobacco, and we ripped the filter off, stuffed it full of pot and twisted it up, and it was like the shittiest, loosest joint ever, you know. And we smoked it, and I, to be completely honest, I don't know if anything really happened. I think it's probably more more of me wanting to think that something happened, but, you know, definitely other, you know, the next time I did feel the effects of it.
Right.
But that was my very first experience with cannabis. What was yours, yeah, Brian?
Oh man, I was so young when I first tried it. But I'll kind of start with my background. I grew up in northern Missouri, up around your parts, and then I moved down here to Branson because my sister started singing in shows, and so I grew up in the entertainment business around here. And it was an interesting lifestyle, you know, going from a very small town to Branson where you're seeing, you know, millions of tourists every single year. But growing around musicians, it was kind of going to happen regardless for me to see cannabis in some way or some other. And I was very interested in it. It's sad to say, even at like around 11 to 12 years old.
What a miscreant. What a
juvenile. I know. And it's weird too, because I grew up with, you know, all the same stuff kind of you did. I mean, you're a little older than me, but I still had the same anti, you know, pot stuff crammed down my throat. We had DARE at school and everything, but I think it's that thing where they tell you not to do it and you want to do it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of what it feels like to me. But
it's the forbidden fruit.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So I always had an interest in it. And I was 13 years old the first time that I actually tried it. And that would be seventh grade for me, I believe. I'm sorry, eighth grade for me is what it would be. And it was with some of my friends, and they asked me if I wanted to try it because their older brother smoked. And I was like, sure, this is a good opportunity. So what we did is they already had the bud there because his older brother smoked. So we got a paper towel roll, and then we cut a little hole out of it. And we put tin foil down in it. And
yes.
Oh, yeah. The good old, pipe that you'd make back.
And then everybody immediately got cancer.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I still have adverse effects from it to this day. But we decided that was the way we were going to do it because we didn't know what else to do, really. So we go out in the woods because we didn't want anyone to smell it. We were very paranoid about it. And we go way back in the woods and we smoke. And I don't really like... I didn't think I felt anything, for a while. And then we get back to his house and his parents show up and they were like, hey, you guys want to go get some movies at Blockbuster? Cause that's when that still was a thing.
Blockbuster. Yeah, all right.
That's back when that was a thing, for the little stay over that we were having or sleepover, whatever you want to call it. And, we were like, sure, why not? So we get in the car and we're waiting in the minivan and it's freaking cold outside. So we went out there and started up early to get it warm. And my friend's sitting in there in the front seat, just revving up the engine. And I started crying, laughing. And I was like, man, why is this so funny? What is going on? And I didn't realize it, but we were super baked. So we go to this, I'll finish the story up here. We go to the Blockbuster and it's three of my friends and we're with his parents and we're in there. One of my friends looking around and he stumbles and hits a shelf over and knocks over the whole freaking cassette tapes and DVDs and holy everything shit. And me and my other friend were literally laughing so hard we had to go outside and lay on the ground because we were crying. Like I could not stop laughing. It was hilarious, dude. It was just that first experience of that different conscious, of that different mindset. And his parents were like, man, you guys are sure in a good mood tonight. You guys are acting like everything is perfect. And after that, I really don't remember too much. Like we went back to the house, hung out. I know we ate like 4 grapefruits a person and passed out. And that was like...
I happened to be at a house with 16 grapefruits. It was amazing.
It was so, I don't know why, but those are like the bits and pieces that I remember. And it was a great experience. And, I didn't really smoke consistently after then. I'll let you pick up if you want to kind of pick up where you started, or I can continue on.
Yeah, actually, I have questions for you.
Okay, so, let's hear it.
Question number one.
Mm-hmm.
What year would this have been? Roughly.
Let me think. I graduated high school in 2011. So I would say 07, 08.
Okay. So this could have been like a strain with a name or this is probably.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I don't know the name or anything, but I know it wasn't brickweed. I know it wasn't that Mexican brickweed. I had seen that before. But it was before I even smoked. I didn't really know what it was or anything like that. I just seen a big clump of it. I mean, it had to have been like a freaking, ounce of that stuff, just like this big packed into it.
Yeah.
And, but it was, from my memory, which isn't the greatest, it was, not brickweed. It was probably something that actually was well grown, pretty well grown. And that's probably why I had maybe a little bit stronger experience than you did.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes.
So, now I had my entire, youth, I guess I would say, like, mm-hmm. I only saw, what I would call like named or decently, processed cannabis one time. And so a little bit of background, a little additional background on me. So I, when I first tried cannabis, it was the one time, and then probably a few days later tried it a second time, was successful in getting stoned and thought like, well, this is just the most amazing thing ever. And that was actually before I even drank. So I didn't know what it was like to be drunk at that point. But I knew that it felt great and there were no like side effects afterward, get a little tired, take a nap or, sleep it off or not, you'd be fine. But, there was no hangover, no headache, no weird feeling afterward. You just felt like pretty great altogether. Soon after I had tried pot, I actually took a trip to Amsterdam, Yeah, I know. So
lucky you. That's a good one.
Yeah. So this would have been, I would have been 19 years old, and it would have been around the year 2000. And it was in college. We went to several countries, but the first one that we went to was the Netherlands. And so we landed in Amsterdam, exchanged a bunch of currency, and then, of course, immediately headed to the first coffee shop that we could find. And I'm pretty sure it was the Damp Cream. I think that was the one back then. And it's still a pretty famous one. And that was the first time that I had actually seen, well, number one, it was the first time that I'd seen like a lot of pot and, you know, varieties of pot and pot with names. So before that trip, I had heard of three strain names, Northern Lights, White Widow, and Bubblegum. That's all that I knew. You know, it was just like, yeah, there are these different kinds of marijuana, and one's called Northern Lights, and one's called White Widow, and one's called Bubblegum because it smells just like bubblegum. But that's all I knew about pot, was that there were a few different kinds. Those were the ones. So fast forward to the coffee shop, someone hands me a menu. I'm pretty sure that I was getting a contact high before I even sat down, because I was spaced out. Like, I was looking at this menu thinking, I have no idea what words to even say.
Can I ask you a question really quick?
Absolutely.
So this was when you were 19, and that was immediately after your first experience. You went out there, basically.
Yeah, it would have been within a few months of my first experience. Awesome. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. That's a good introduction right there.
Yeah. It was something. Well, so I was going to ask you later if you'd ever had a bad cannabis experience. And
for sure.
And I have, and it was actually this one in Amsterdam. So awesome. I guess I'll segue into that. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's hear that.
So, looked at the menu, couldn't make sense of it. I remember it was like weed on one side, hash on the other, because hash in Europe is a very, very popular thing. Due to, you know, just historically and its proximity to where hash is manufactured, you know, or has been made. So anyway, I don't order anything off the menu. Someone hands me a joint of White Widow, and I'm like, man, I'll take a little tokey toke of that. One puff. And I was gone, like within a minute, like just on Mars. And we leave the coffee shop. I'm so confused. And I don't know if you've ever had one of those experiences where you've realized way too late that someone has been speaking to you, you know? So I remember being on this corner in Amsterdam. Now, we were with a tour group, so like people were like pointing out sites and stuff, and for whatever reason there's a guy in a corner playing a didgeridoo. You know what that is?
Yes.
One of those, so for those of you who don't know what a didgeridoo is, it is one of those long, like, pipe-like instruments that they play in Australia and New Zealand, and it has, like, that wah, 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 wah sound. So there's, like,
that's been trippy enough right there.
Dude, I am honest. So, yeah, homeboy's on the corner, you know, like, playing his didgeridoo, and I'm not just like locked in. I'm pretty sure at this point, like, he and I are sharing some sort of like wavelength, you know, like things are happening. He doesn't really know it. I know it. It's fine. But wah, 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 wah. And then I realized that the wah, wah sound is actually the guy who's been talking to me for the last 10 minutes. Like, and that, you know, I'm staring at his mouth moving and hearing the didgeridoo anyway. Oh. So things are starting to go downhill really fast. I'm completely, out of sorts, like just not even connected to reality at this point, just high out of my brain. And, this would have been early springtime, and it was still cold and rainy over there in, the Netherlands. So I'm walking around in the cold and the rain. I get lost in the city with my girlfriend. She went on this trip, and end up getting lost in Amsterdam, which, I mean, it's probably a safe enough city. I don't know. I mean, nothing ever happened to me, but I remember trying to seek shelter from the rain. And I was like standing in this doorway, and I don't even know, like, a doorway to what or where. It was just a doorway. And this giant Dutch guy comes up to me, and he's like, you know, said something Dutch to me. And I remember saying, "Hola, amigo." And he didn't think that was cool at all. So he like
super offended by it.
Yeah. He's like, blah, 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 Dutch words, and like pushes me out of the way. And I'm like, oh crap. I get beat up and I'm high and I'm lost and none of this feels right. So, keep on keeping on. I'm trying to find my way out of the city. You know, we've got this map. I can't even read words. So I don't even know why I'm looking at it. I end up thinking that I was going to throw up. And, I did do that. Oh, so I'm walking down the sidewalk and the urge strikes to vomit. Thank God there are canals like all over the place in Amsterdam. Yeah. Like, I turn to my right, there's a canal, and I'm like, perfect, blit, into a canal, find a cab, and So we see this cab parked, and I stumble over to the cab, and I have this little business card for my hotel room. Thank God. And I'm just like, I hand it to the cabbie, and I'm like, my dude, please just understand what I'm trying to tell you. Take this card and take me to this place. And I remember him saying words to me, and I'm like, I'm going to get in, and I'm just going to hope that we end up at the hotel, because I don't know how to say like the right words to you. And even if you were speaking my language, I probably wouldn't understand it. Let's just be real. So, we take this cab ride, and I swear, I mean, he was probably driving the speed limit, and he was probably like driving like a church lady, but it felt like the fucking ride from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. You know what I'm talking about? Yes. Like the scary, trippy boat ride. I swear he was driving on sidewalks and shit, and probably not, but that's what it felt like to me.
Well, don't they have cobblestone over there? So it was probably bumpy.
Oh, maybe that was it.
I bet that was it. Thinking,
you know, 20 years later, I'm like...
There it is. And who were you with again? Were you with friends or?
I was with, it was an art class that, that we went with in college. So I was an art major in college, and that was like our, like one of our trips. We were going to all these different museums all over Europe. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, we stopped at Amsterdam first. So that was cool, I guess.
Yeah,
that was my first experience with like really, really strong pot and a named strain. So you know, like I knew White Widow kicked my ass. One hit of that just sent me over the moon. But you know, eventually made it back to the hotel room, drank some orange juice, slept it off. Everything was cool from there on out. I did kind of swear off pot for like a few weeks, because I was like, that was bad. That was real bad.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. You know, but I got back into it.
I've never thrown up from cannabis. So that's a hell of an experience. I can't imagine.
Yeah.
You just get really dizzy.
I don't remember. I mean, I think I was like pretty dizzy the entire time, but I just got the urge. It was just like, I mean, there was no warning. It was like, hey, you're about to throw up. And I was like, no, okay, cool. And, you know, just picked a direction and went with it. Honestly. Sure. Yeah.
And after that experience in Amsterdam, how long was it until you actually like continued or tried it again or went back into it? Or, I mean, you can go up to, you know, when even you started growing for yourself, if you want to.
Yeah.
And I can go back from when I was in eighth grade to forward where I'm at now.
Yeah, sure. So
just bounce back.
Yeah, absolutely. I tried it, I guess I would say like tried it like off and on a few more times after that. And it was, and it was always brickweed. So coming back to mid Missouri, and this is a good point really quickly. So for those of you guys who don't know us, Bryce mentioned this earlier, but we are from the same, small town in mid Missouri. So, now I grew up here. Bryce didn't. Bryce moved away when he was younger, but, we didn't actually meet each other until, like about a year ago or so, you think?
Yeah. About a year ago. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On Instagram, you know, we both had these cannabis pages and these cannabis profiles, and we just started talking, because we were growing like similar genetics and stuff.
Let's be real. I was fanboying over your grow setup, and I was like, bro, what the hell? You got to show me how to do that.
You quit it. I mean, maybe it was a little bit like that, but it was, I mean, it was mostly like, you know, hey, we like, you know, we're just two growers and we just kind of like linked up and, you know, started chit chatting. But then we found out like, I know his family and I've known like a lot of your family, you know, for a long time. And like your family knew like my wife's family, like we, like these connections, like we're like, we have these very intertwined connections that we didn't even know existed. And the funny thing is that we just like, we met each other on Instagram as adults, like a year ago, but we know we've led somewhat similar lives and we have these very similar circles that we exist in, and had no idea. And it was actually like pot that brought us together.
Yeah. And just to get the point across of how weird it was, you're wife's father,
stepdad
dated my mom.
Yes,
right? Isn't that what it was?
True story.
Very weird. That is, yeah, super weird on that.
Oh, totally. Yeah, that really freaked me out. I'm not gonna lie. I was like, geez, man, this is, we're going like layers deep into this.
Yes.
So yeah, I, you know, after that experience, I'd smoked a few more times, and maybe more than a few, but like, you know, it was no longer, unfamiliar. So, you know, pick up a joint at a party or, hit a pipe or something. Not a big deal. It was just like, now I wasn't like a dedicated like pot smoker at that point, but it was like, socially,
sure, right.
Absolutely. No qualms with it whatsoever. And then I did a really weird thing. So, in my late 20s, I got this wild hair and I was working in, higher education. So I was in that field and I was really bored with my life. Or maybe not life, but like just bored, with my job. And I decided for whatever reason, I was going to be a cop, which is like a crazy thing to bring up right about now. Yeah. So, on this
surprise, everybody,
surprise, everybody who's been talking to me on Instagram for a while, it's totally cool. Don't worry about it. It's fine. But yeah, I took a detour. And the funny thing is like, I didn't become a cop because like I had these really genuine, aspirations to like do good and help the public. I really just wanted some excitement. I wanted to drive fast and shoot guns. Like that was, if I'm just going to be like totally open about it, I wanted to do something exciting. I applied for the police academy, applied to it, got accepted. And the day that I got my acceptance letter, I threw away all my shit. So, all of my bongs, I threw them away and my pipes and my hitters and all the my penny scale, all the things that you right. collect over the years, my little stash box, and my pot, threw it all away. Never touched it again until, after I was a cop. Now, as a police officer, I did that for about 8 years. I started out as a patrolman, became a detective, served on the SWAT team for 4 years. So I had a lot of experience with marijuana before being a police officer, which I think really helped me in my role as a police officer because I didn't demonize marijuana. I knew what it was. I wasn't afraid of it. I didn't judge people who used it. It's like, to me, it was like taking an aspirin, or drinking a beer, whatever. So, did I arrest people? Certainly. Mm-hmm. Did I also though make a lot of, use a lot of discretion and flush a lot of joints or, a lot of people would ditch that shit if they were cool. Absolutely. I'll go ahead and say that like, I never once got into a fight with anybody who was just stoned. I never went to a call that originated because someone was just stoned. Mm-hmm. So that was an eye opener for me. And
that's a great point to bring up, man. That's a really good point to bring up for sure.
Yeah. Maybe there are other law enforcement officers listening or former law enforcement officers, who knows, mm-hmm. but that was always something that was very interesting to me was the fact that police officers who had not tried marijuana ever in their lives had this horrible preconceived notion about it. It's terrible. You're going to waste your life, blah, 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 blah. And to the point where I felt so guilty for having done it before that I pretended not to know what a grinder was. Like true shit. So we went to this house and arrested this dude and this cop's like, hey, that's a marijuana grinder. And I'm like, oh, what do they use that for? It's a pretty shitty one because, mine was like a hell of a knife.
That's so funny.
I was naive because, they were so judgmental. And, for a while I was a member of a major case squad. And I remember when Colorado began legalizing marijuana when they were in the process of that, having meetings with the Missouri State Highway Patrol. And, a lot of the captains and stuff were so opposed to it. Even though, statistically speaking, what Colorado was reporting was a decrease in, violent arrests and mm-hmm. All of these things were coming down. These numbers were dropping. They're like, but it's still terrible. And there's going to be a gateway drug and there's going to be more DWIs. And no, because honestly, if you knew anything about pot, you would know that, people tend to just stay where they're at when they're stoned for the most part. Now, I mean, granted you get people who get high and go for a ride or whatever. Not saying that's a great idea, but right. I think for the most people get stoned, they stay where they are. They get comfy. They eat a little bit, laugh, listen mm-hmm. to music, play music, make a little love, that kind of thing. That's pot. That's, meth, alcohol, PCP, heroin, all that shit. on a completely different level. So that's my takeaway. My experiences prior to law enforcement, my experiences with cannabis helped shape the way that I treated people, mm-hmm. who were using cannabis, because it was nothing to me. And I had those candid conversations with people like, as a police officer, I supported legalization or decriminalization because it made no sense. It made no sense to arrest people for possession or consumption of a plant that grows in the ground, man. Yeah. That even, even as a cop, okay, this is illegal and technically it's my job to arrest for it. Now, if they had fucking Pablo Escobar rolled through town and had bales of pot, I obviously couldn't let that go. But
for sure,
but someone with a couple of joints in their pocket, keep on keeping on, man.
It's really cool that you had those cannabis experiences before you decided to take that little leap and do a whole nother adventure on your own there. And I just like how you tied it in that it helped you shape your experience and understanding that these people most likely didn't have bad intentions or weren't doing something wrong if they were just smoking cannabis.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt. Mm-hmm. And, so it's funny, whenever I was in the process of becoming a police officer, I had to go through this barrage of psychological questioning. So I had to go talk to a shrink for 8 hours, and she just rapid fire hit me with all these crazy ass questions. And mm-hmm. One of them was about using cannabis, and I was honest. I was like, yeah, I'd used pot before, I smoked pot. And the psychiatrist was like, that's awesome. I wish more police officers had used marijuana, because honestly, it's the people who don't have the experience, who have these crazy ass preconceived notions that aren't backed by anything other than, the stigmas that have been passed down from others. And it's just to perpetuate that is just ridiculous. In my opinion, go try it, chill out. As an aside, I've gotten stoned with cops since then. I left law enforcement in 2016. And the reason that I left law enforcement was because of chronic PTSD from being a cop. So ironically, I went back to right away using my cop skills to find the first stoner that I could pick out. And I was I believe that you probably consume marijuana, and I would like you to sell me some. So,
I'm sure that went over well.
Yeah, actually, perfect. Fine. He's like, yep, you got me. And he's like, well, how much are you looking for? I'm like, this is amazing.
That was awesome.
Yeah, and so that, so for me, it was a no brainer to go back to pot right away, because part of the symptoms from the PTSD were nightmares. That was a big problem for me. And I remembered from when I smoked that if I smoked, I typically didn't dream. If I smoked regularly, if you don't dream, you don't have nightmares. And fast forward a little bit to me, delving back into cannabis, and now so my second introduction to cannabis was about 8 years after I'd left it. So things had changed quite a bit. Pot, you couldn't find Mexican brickweed anywhere. Pot was really expensive. I used to be able to get a quarter for $25, and now a quarter cost $100. And I was like, well, this is bullshit. But the pot also looked completely different. It was it looked like bud. Yeah. It wasn't flat.
It had structure to it.
It had structure. Exactly. It smelled really good. It was a hell of a lot stronger than I remember.
For sure.
So what ultimately got me into growing was deciding, number one, dealers are sketchy and unreliable, and I don't ever want to be in a position where I don't have pot, because since I was medicating with it now, mm-hmm. this was prior to legalization. So I had taken a couple trips to Denver to while we were going out on vacation. I wouldn't just go straight to Denver for pot, but we'd hit it on the way back. I'd buy a little bit of weed, bring it back with me, pick out a few strains and bring it back. And that was when I knew that I had to start growing, because Bryce, I'll tell you that driving I-70 from Denver back was I had a clenched butthole the entire time.
You t- took the next question right out of my mouth. I was going to say, were you paranoid on that drive? Because I would have been.
Yeah. And, you know, like, Kansas is not a friendly state at all.
Yeah, super hard on it.
They're super hard. They, you know, they had a lot of troopers, like, up on the median watching eastbound traffic. And, you know, I had that knowledge from being a law enforcement officer that, you know, drugs typically travel from southwest to northeast. So, you know, cops are going to be looking for out-of-state plates traveling east from west. You know, and I fit the bill, and I knew, you know, and all I had in the car was an ounce at the time, and it was in a bear-proof container, wrapped up and then wrapped up and then rewrapped. But still, it was
sketchy.
It's still very sketchy. And so at a certain point, you know, I knew that statistically speaking, it was just a numbers game before I got caught, you know. Speed a little bit, drift over a line, you know, get tired. It's a long, boring ass drive. It's basically set up to fuck you, right? That drive. And so I made the decision to start growing prior to legalization because, in my opinion, and especially with my experience and background in law enforcement, I knew that you were safest in your own home. You have the most rights in your own home. In your car, you've got next to no rights, you know, and it's so much easier to get caught. So I did as much homework as I possibly could. I bought a bunch of books. You know, I read up on things, and before I ever started buying seeds, equipment, or anything like that, and I started growing at home. That was my way of sustaining myself, making sure that I had access to a high quality pot that didn't come from someone's butthole. You know, had been sitting around for 6 months in a hot car, you know, because you'd get a bag of weed and sometimes it'd be perfect. And then, you know, the next time from the same person, it's like, what the, like, this is dust. Like, I, you know, yeah. I wouldn't sell this to my worst enemy. It's
clean medicine for you, you know, no pesticides, no bullshit. You know exactly what's in it. So I totally get that.
Yep. So that's ultimately like what led me to grow was just having access to strains. And, you know, I remember, so one particular strain, that I picked up was Bodie's Sunshine Daydream. And I just got it based on the description, at the dispensary. I was like, oh, that sounds like good pot. So I didn't know anything about Bodie. I didn't know anything about the strain, bought it, brought it home. I tried it with three other strains. On that same trip, I picked up Harlequin, mm-hmm. a strain called Riptide, and I have no idea who made that or what that is. Sunshine Daydream, and then Durban Poison. So those were the strains that I brought home with me. Out of the four, Sunshine Daydream was my favorite. It had an amazing flavor, just the most upbeat, uplifted, like happy pot vibes, you know. And so it was that strain that made me think, okay, I need to find out who made these seeds. Like, where can I get these seeds and grow them myself? And that, I mean, that literally started my descent into the rabbit hole, was looking for Bodie, right. or looking for Sunshine Daydream, found Bodie, and now looking at all the seeds that Bodie makes, and then blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Here we are.
And what year was that when you started actually like officially growing? 2016 or 17?
18, yeah. I want to say. Yeah. It would have been maybe like spring of 18, late 2017, early 2018. I would say, yeah, 17 going into 18.
Yeah.
So I was a prohibition grower
been like a year, I think, basically. Yeah. If it's 2017, yeah.
Yeah, so a year or so. And then I had a couple failed attempts before that when I was younger. Mm-hmm. Like when I was a kid, I tried to grow pot a few times. And it wasn't failed in that I couldn't grow it, but I got scared. So, like, the plants would get so big, I would freak out, cut them down. And, I mean, they were beautiful plants, but I was like, oh, they're going to find me. So I cut them down. And the thing was, though, I didn't know anything about the photo periods. I didn't know when to turn the lights on and off for how long. I didn't know anything, so it wouldn't have mattered either way. I wouldn't have known how to sex them at that point. So right. It's probably for the best.
Yeah. For sure. That's cool, man. And that's, I mean, just having, like I said, that law enforcement experience to where you are now, it's just like, I don't know. I would have never pinned you as that ever. I don't think everyone would. And I wish that more law enforcement would take the attitude that you have, and not even just towards cannabis, but towards everything. That's a whole other different topic. We'll talk about that
now. I appreciate that though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mighty kind of you to say.
Oh, well, it's true, man. So you want me to dive in here on mine?
Yeah. Let's back to you.
So we'll roll all the way back to eighth grade, because that's when I first started, right? So I had that experience with my friends. And then after that, I actually ended up getting kicked out of eighth grade for cannabis. I'm trying to think here. My friends, it was around 420. Imagine that. They brought some to school. And we were going to go after school immediately and smoke some to celebrate 420. I didn't even really know what it meant. They just told me, hey, it's National Pot Day. I was like, cool, sounds good, let's try it. Well, somehow or another throughout the day, my friend told a bunch of people that he had weed because he thought it was cool. And they ended up pulling him out of the eighth hour, which was the last class, and pulled him into the office and was like, hey, we know that you got cannabis on you. And he actually ended up ratting me out. And I was so mad. He told him that it was my idea and it was my cannabis, and he was holding on to it for me. And so they called me into the office, and I had to go through a whole spiel, and I was like, that's hilarious. I obviously wasn't holding on to it at all. He was the one who had it. It was both of our ideas, and we were going to do it all together. So long story short, they called my parents. My parents get involved. My mom and dad were super upset at me over it. I mean, as any parent, you know, probably should be.
Sure. I mean, even if you're like, you know, open and something of that, it's young.
Yeah,
it's young.
It is. And I think that's what they're worried about. Just probably seeing like, oh shit, that's probably going to lead down a bad path if I continue that. And my mom, you know, she's kind of an old school hippie. So she had smoked plenty of times before. My dad has never smoked.
Really?
Yes.
Still to this day has not.
Do what?
Still to this day?
No. Yeah. Pretty weird. He's not against it now. He used to be a lot though.
Really?
He used to be very against it. Yes. Just more conservative mindset. Just didn't understand it, you know, but they drank. It was just, it's funny. You know what I mean? It was just that buy into all the propaganda and all the bullshit that was pushed out. The FDA or whatever says it's bad, so it's bad. We don't trust it, whatever. And, he was super upset at me. He thought I was throwing away my life, all that good stuff, you know? But the funny part on that is I obviously am not friends with that guy anymore. I didn't speak to him after that, and I still haven't. I know, fuck that dude. If you're listening, Danny, fuck you. Danny? You do, yeah. Oh, yeah, he screwed me over good. But after all that happened, this is the funny part. I'm going to kind of pin off on it here. My parents, I didn't get any legal trouble because I didn't have anything on me. So they couldn't pin me for nothing, right? But my parents acted like I was on probation and took me to a probation officer just to talk to me and tricked me into thinking I was on probation until I was like 18. And
what?
Get this, Tim. I didn't know that until like 4 years ago. I was never really on probation. I just put it all together. They never told me. And I was thinking to myself, and I was like, I never had to do other checkups. They never drug tested me. And I called my mom and dad one day. I was like, was I ever really on probation? They started dying laughing. They were like, no, you didn't know that? I was like, no, I didn't even know.
Oh.
Until I was like 25.
You are fucking kidding me.
So like, they got me so
bad. We thought like you had a record. You're on probation. Like,
oh, yeah.
You're probably getting like tatted up like, yeah, I'm a felon, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I was a cool kid at school, but I got kicked out. Dude, they got me so good on that one. It cracks me up looking back at it now. Like, they were very smooth on it. I'm impressed with how they got with that master plan. But I got kicked out of eighth grade for the rest of the year. I didn't get to go back to school until my freshman year. They actually let me graduate and all that stuff. So that was cool. But I really didn't start my freshman year. I don't think I smoked at all. Because I had that bad experience, obviously, and I put pressure on myself. Everyone was telling me I was doing something wrong. And when you're that young, you're very impressionable, you know, and I really thought that it was a bad thing. I just wasn't really kind of thinking for myself at that point. And I was doing sports and all that, and they drug test for it, so I didn't want to get kicked out or anything. Well, I started getting into music again, and music led me down to that path a little bit. And I've always been into music. Like, we had bands when I was in eighth grade, and I started a band when I was in ninth grade.
And, what do you play?
I was doing vocals.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like a metal band, so it was like screaming vocals.
Oh, God.
Yeah, yeah. I was one of those kids. I was one of the scene kids, you know, girl jeans. Okay, so this is going to get really deep. This, if you want to know a little bit more about myself here. Yeah. Okay, so in eighth grade, I went like a completely flip on who I was. I like was dressing Hollister and Abercrombie and all that stuff to straight skinny jeans, wearing guyliner. And like
band eyeliner.
Eyeliner for guys. That was more. Yeah.
What?
Oh, yeah. I was completely seen. You know what a seen kid is, right? Like an emo kid.
I don't know what that means.
Do you know what an emo kid is?
Emo. Yeah, like the little scary dark kids.
Me. That was me. Like long swoop hair in the front. I had snake bite piercings. Like I was a little heavy metal dude. Yeah. So I completely flipped, lost all my friends because I started wearing eyeliner and freaking skinny jeans. So I started hanging out with the people that associated with music and stuff. And I kind of just like booted all my other friends off and like completely changed my crew of my friends. I'm so glad that happened to me too. But so anyways, get kicked out, go into ninth grade, don't really participate too much into it. Around my sophomore year is when I decided to try it again. And honestly, after my sophomore year experience, it was at a party with my friends and we just smoked on a couple hits of a joint. I really kind of fell back in love with it again. I didn't have a bad experience. And, you know, you get paranoid, especially when you're a kid doing it. Oh, I would get super paranoid talking to my parents on the phone when I'm stoned. And
that was the worst. You're like,
oh, yeah. I would have to go outside in the woods just to talk to my parents. So I was away from everyone. Oh,
look at you all fancy with a cell phone when you were a kid.
Oh, it wasn't cool. It was, you know, I remember like one of those Nokia brick phones. Oh, you probably had the bag phones back in the day, right?
Not even that, dude. So, like, you know, when I grew up, it was like corded phones. I remember when we got our first cordless phone.
No.
It had like this antenna that you could pull out. It was like 6 feet long and you could beat the shit out of someone with it.
Yes. Yes.
And then I remember my dad got a car phone in the 90s, and that was pretty big shit.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't get a cell phone until I was like way older.
Right. Right.
Like, I didn't have a cell phone until probably around 2005 or 2006.
Yeah, see, my first cell phone was when I was like 13, 14 years old around that time. Because that's when I started going out with my friends. My parents wouldn't be able to get in touch with me, all that stuff. So they got me one of those, and I used it for that. It was nothing cool. Not like these fancy phones nowadays.
Sure.
But let me try to think, where did I leave off at? My cannabis experience at the party. After that, it was good. You know, I didn't smoke every day. Until then, it was about, I would say, my junior year is when I really started getting like heavy, heavy into cannabis. And it got to the point where my senior year, I was smoking before class almost every day with my friends. We would meet up, yeah, my senior year. And I was pretty big into like AP English, and I was doing human physiology and all this stuff. And I loved coming into class. Bait. Loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I don't know why. It's just that we just decided every day our senior year, me and my friends would meet up around the corner and we would both smoke a joint.
So how did you do academically?
Good, man. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I actually did really well. Like, I passed all those classes. I got my certified for vet tech during my junior year. So, I mean, I was doing tougher classes. And I didn't know what I wanted to do, though, when I graduated high school. I had no clue. You know, I had no clue what I was going to do, but we did smoke about every day before class, and my parents obviously didn't know that, but I was very open with them about who I was and the things that, you know, I enjoyed, and they knew that I did participate in it every once in a while. Sure. And at least I was honest with them, you know, that's the way I saw it. And maybe I was too honest with them at some times, you know, but I think they appreciated it.
I think if your parents are prepared for it, yeah, or, you know, if you have parents who are more open-minded, or if you have a more mature relationship with your parents, yeah, then it's absolutely an awesome thing. Now,
yeah,
I, at 39 years old, still have parents who have no idea that I've ever smoked pot, much less that I'm Ozark Mountain Bandit and, you know, grow.
Oh, gosh, that's funny.
Yeah. Dude. So, I mean, I know that to this day, like my parents would shit their pants because they're still that close-minded, and they don't, you know, they see dispensaries opening up now and they're very bothered by it and they don't understand it. So, you know, my thing is trying to gently tell them like, hey, times have changed, guys. It's, you know, people aren't treating cannabis the same way as they always have. You know, and I would love to be able to tell them, like, hey, you know what? Because they saw a marked, improvement in me, dealing with PTSD.
Yeah.
And that improvement came like when I really started like growing my own pot, and it was really good quality, and I had total control over it. And
for sure.
And I could choose the strains that I wanted to grow that were most beneficial to me. So, I would love to be able to tell them, like, hey, you know, the reason that I got better is because I started smoking pot, because, you know, it helped my appetite. It helped me sleep. It helped me stay calm during the day. For me, it's just like, it gives me a sense of overall well-being, you know, even a day after I smoke, it's just better. Everything's a little bit better. Mm-hmm. At some point we need to, like, on one of these episodes, we'll have to have the fungi talk.
Yeah.
Because that in my opinion was also like instrumental in kind of resetting my brain, you know.
Agreed. I agree 100% with that. And that's, that's something that we can talk about, because I have an experience with that a little bit in my younger years too. So,
really?
Yeah. So, I didn't really drink much. That's the funny thing too. When I was in high school, I was smoking, but I didn't drink. When we go to the parties, I was the stoner guy. Like, I always came in there smelling like fucking skunk and I super, super low. And that was always, my little trademark, and I kind of rolled with it. And everyone has always known that I smoked, and I did continue even sports throughout my high school years, like wrestling. I did trap shooting and football and all that stuff. And the funny thing is, I actually got drug tested twice my senior year and somehow passed. I don't know how.
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah, I have no clue to this day.
How that happened. Really good. They're like, nah, fuck it, he's too good.
I honestly think they gave me passes on it when I look back at it, because I have no clue how. I wasn't doing anything bad. I really wasn't a bad kid. I was a partier though. I would have huge parties out at my house that the school would know about and talk to me about. Like, I'm talking about 300 people, Tim. Like, I'm not kidding.
No kidding.
I'm not kidding. Yeah, my parents have 60 acres out north of town, and we would have people from all the surrounding cities come over, like friends from everywhere. And I don't know, cannabis never really seemed to affect me too negative during my younger years. I will say though, it did hinder some options in my life that I look back and I'm grateful that I didn't continue. And what I'm talking about is military. I was this close to going into the military.
Now, if you guys obviously can't see this, but when Bryce said this close, he made this gesture with his finger, or two fingers. And he was essentially about as close as a mouse's penis in size. If you could just imagine how big that would be, he was that close.
That's right. I forget that there's the video. I forget about that. But yes, it was very close, I should say, to joining the military. I mean, to the point where I was almost assigned papers and everything. And okay. Yeah. And I did trap shooting. So, trap shooting, I was really good at. That was actually my best sport I did in high school. Won national 4 years in a row, won 5 different states, first place 4 years in a row. Like, that was my biggest sport that I did. That was really good at. And the military loves that. Obviously, it has to do with shooting and, a mental aspect of it as well, too.
Discipline, so, patience.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I was, scouted pretty hard for that. And of course, the recruiters promise you everything in the world. And I was going to be a scout sniper is what I was signing up to be. So I am very thankful, though, I didn't take that route, because I look back at it now and I know my personality and who I am. And I would have been a lifer, and, I wouldn't be the person I am today. I think I've been that person that it would be very hard for me to come back to a civilian lifestyle. And I don't know, because I didn't experience it or go through it, but I feel like that would have been a very hard adjustment for me. And even the aspect of, taking a life too, I think that would have really weighed on me a lot, just knowing who I am now. And the cannabis really kind of deterred me from doing that. And I kicked myself at first when I didn't do it, like a couple of years down the road. I was very mad at myself. I'm like, why am I letting a freaking, plant control my life? But I wasn't. I was smoking and I was getting in deep thought, and I was talking myself out of it when I was high, is basically what I was doing.
Which, honestly, probably for the best.
Absolutely.
So you had actually, it wasn't like you were disqualified. You actually made the decision, like at the 11th hour, like, nope, I'm not doing it.
Yep. I made the decision I wasn't going to do it. And I mean, if you'd asked my dad, you know, he would have told you from the age I was 8 that I was going to be in the military. That was just my mindset. Yeah. That's just, you know, I wanted it. That's what I wanted to do. I grew up on the farm and hunting and everything. I had everything that I loved about it. And I still think I would have liked it. You know, I'm not saying I wouldn't have loved it. I probably would have, but I don't know. I'm just glad that I didn't take that path because I know I would be a different person and it would just be a hard adjustment. So, you know, after high school, I went to college for 2 years and I continued to smoke throughout then, you know, not really every day, but pretty heavy. I would smoke. And, I did 2 years of college and I was like, oh, this isn't for me. And I just couldn't do it anymore. I just felt like I was running in circles. And, I decided
did you know what you wanted to do. Did you have like a direction at that point?
I knew I wanted to do something kind of in biology. And that's kind of what I was going for, was a biology degree. I didn't know what. I wanted to work with either plants or something outdoors or being outside or wildlife. Or I even had thought about even becoming like medical as well, too, because I did human physiology in high school my senior year and done like 3 human cadavers and stuff and did the dissecting and everything. And I loved it. I loved it. But I don't know. I couldn't handle the monotonous of the school and doing it over and over and over again. So I decided to try to be, you know, my own entrepreneur a little bit and just find different jobs, see what I can make out of my life, really. And then that's kind of what's led me where I am today. And I've been at my place where I've been employed for 7 years now.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is sales. I don't mind saying that. I won't say.
Yeah. No, I'm in the mortgage industry. I've been in there for about 5 years. So yeah. That's another thing about Bryce and I. You know, we both have like these normal day jobs. You know, these like 9-to-5s, if you will. And all of this cannabis stuff sort of happens in our off time. Like that's my hobby. And so, you know, Bryce and I, we're both in Missouri. We're both authorized cultivators for medical marijuana. Now, I grow just for myself. So I have my cultivation license, my cannabis, like my medical card. But Bryce also is a caretaker. Mm-hmm. And can you tell us like what that means here in Missouri? Like what that
means? Yeah. So a caregiver is basically someone that provides medicine, cannabis, for people who have ailments. It can be anything as from osteoporosis to cancer to any ailment that you can basically get a card for, you can provide for them. So they don't have to grow for themselves. They may not have the time, the space, the money to do it, whatever. And, you know, my first patient was my mom. That was my first patient. Yeah. And she has really bad arthritis. So that's what she uses for. And I actually make a coconut oil mixture for her. And that's really? How she takes it. Yeah. Yep. She mixes it with her coffee and it helps her get out of bed every day with not aching. And, you know, of course the pain's not gone, but it allows her to live her life how she wants to, you know. And then I have several other patients as well too. One that actually does have cancer and, you know, really? Yes, I will make, not RSO, cause RSO is made with rubbing alcohol. Faco, full extracted cannabis. Yes, that's what I make. Instead of RSO, same thing, just different extraction method. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I did RSO one time. I use Everclear as the.
That's what I use. So it's technically FACO or however you say it.
Okay.
Full extracted cannabis. That's the two differences in that.
Interesting. We need to do an episode about like extracts and all that.
Absolutely.
One of the things that I bought over Black Friday was one of those Levo oil machines. Mm-hmm. It's basically like the magical butter machine, but it's it looks a little bit nicer. Like it just looks a tabletop appliance, and it'll carb your weed, allow you to infuse oils or butters or lotions or topicals, anything like that, and it just like spits it out.
That's cool. I'm gonna have to invest in one of those.
Yeah, check it out. I mean, it hasn't shipped yet. It hasn't shipped yet. LevoOil.com.
Help my homie out here, yo.
I think, you know, in future episodes, we can talk about, you know, the different preparations, and we can talk about, growing genetics. There are, you know, 1,000 different ways to take this. And I think what we'll probably do is, you know, keep these down to 1 hour sessions. That way, you know, you guys can listen on your commutes. You can listen in your free time. You can listen while you're pretending to work. We don't care.
Yep.
It doesn't matter. Just do one of these every few weeks, once a month. We'll see We'll see what the schedule looks like. Anything else you want to add, Bryce, before we wrap up here?
No, I think we covered it because you talked about how we met and all that good stuff. And I think that was good, man. I'm very happy with how this went for the first time.
Yeah, likewise. I think we'll have a good show here. So if you guys enjoyed this, let us know. We are going to post this episode to our Instagram accounts. Again, I'm Ozark Mountain Bandit. Next to me on screen, but not in person, is Half Baked. Look up our Instagram accounts, and we'll have links for this. So moving forward, if you guys have suggestions for topics, what would you like to hear about? Please let us know. We'd be very interested. You know, Bryce and I both grow. We grow organically. That's kind of our thing. You do no-till as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep. So
we're both low-till, I guess, technically, because I throw amendments in there.
Another good thing I'd like to talk about. Mm-hmm. Like, what is the definition of no-till, and how does, you know, low-till,
right,
where does that come in? Anyway, so many this will end up being a 4-hour podcast. So at this point, what I will say is to everybody who did tune in and listen, thank you. We appreciate you. Please give us feedback. Let us know if you loved it. Let us know if you hated it. If you would change anything up, do things differently, we'd love to hear about it. But for now, I am Tim, a.k.a. Ozark Mountain Bandit.
And I am Bryce, a.k.a. Half Baked.
And we will see you guys next time. Thanks for listening to the Hippie Speedball Show.